Hey, this is Daniel. Thanks for listening to DIY Money. If you haven't already, be sure to give us a 5-star review on iTunes so your friends know that they can learn from the show. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to another edition of DIY Money.
DIY Money.
What's shaking, Logan?
What is shaking? I just have this feeling this morning. I want to know stories from like the old days when you were first starting the business.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like that'd be kind of interesting. I feel like people would like that to know something about
how
like,
far
when
do you want to go back?
Started, like the very start.
At last, ready to make my fortune. My first day as a future master of the universe.
Well, the very start, I was a broker in an office.
Okay.
That was. Everything that you would think of an old school Wall Street office. Our system was a little bit different in that we didn't just sell stocks. We had a system. We could sell anything, quite honestly.
Okay.
But this is no joke. 12 brokers, 10 phones. If you didn't get there early, you didn't get a phone. It was like survival of the fittest. There was only one day I didn't get there in time to get a phone, and I was so pissed off. And I dialed for dollars in my car all day.
Wow.
On the cell phone. Yeah, which was costed me money because there was no such thing as like free
data or whatever.
Yeah. So no, I worked in an office. This is the whole impetus behind how we evolved into a fee only advising firm. I worked in an office, and at the time, listen, no discredit, this was 2000, year 2000, market had topped, market starting to tumble, but nobody really knew this for quite some time. It was just a correction after a prolonged bull market, because even in the late 90s, you had big corrections. So when you'd call people and talk to them about buying stock or getting investment, you know, going or whatever, they were, our hit rate was probably pretty high. But I mean, I probably dialed 300-400 dials a day. Our goal, in addition, obviously, again, we built up a book, and then we could call those clients and pitch them on ideas and make commission on selling stocks. But to get a client, we would try to send them some material about our firm or a topic, call them back. 99% of the time, they're like, no, never got it. Click, you know. So you'd go through this process of attrition. And then finally, you'd try to get them to a seminar. And the seminar was all about estate planning and protecting your assets. At the time, people will find this fascinating for anybody that cares. The estate tax credit at the time was $675,000. So if you had more than $675,000 at your death, your tax rate would start around 40%.
And that's like up in the millions now.
Yeah, it's like $5 to $6 million a piece.
Right.
So anyways, those were our hot buttons. But anyways, I did that for 1 year.
Yeah.
One year.
Absolutely terrible.
Now, ironically, I made a lot of money. I think I made like $250,000 that year. No joke. I made more money than I could imagine my first year. But I hated it. Mm-hmm. I absolutely 100% hated it. It was not what I wanted to do, but I loved markets. So I went into my father at the time. He was the principal owner of the firm. And I said, I have this great idea. I want to go down to Kentucky and I want to open my own office and I want to be a fee-only advisor.
He said, that's the best idea I've ever
heard. Yes, Quint, I love it.
My goodness, what an idea. Why didn't I think of that?
No, he said, expletive, expletive, you are an idiot. You've been in the business no longer than a cup of coffee. Yeah, and then that began what is now Juul in 2001. So maybe we'll leave it there and you can stay tuned for the rest of the story.
I know, I liked it.
The rest of the story. Anyways, you probably don't remember that. Paul Harvey, rest of the story? Yeah, it doesn't even ring a bell, do you? Not even close.
Useless. Utterly useless.
Okay. So we'll come back and maybe keep expanding on that story, because it is a good one. And there's a lot of ups and downs along the way, for sure. This episode sponsored by Juul Financial. We had such a cool call just yesterday with some folks down in Texas. And, you know, the gentleman said, I appreciate his candor. He'll listen to this. And so I'm certainly not going to use his name. But I remember he was like, I'm a control freak. And his wife laughed. He's like, I'm a control freak, but I just feel like I'm at the point where I've saved, I've done the things, and I need some assistance. And it's probably going to be most advantageous for them in the areas of tax savings, strategic, like investing. So where's the best place? There's a small business involved, mm-hmm. and I could tell very quickly they may not be taking advantage of some of the more tax advantage side of that. I will get into it and see if that's an issue or not, or an opportunity or not. But ultimately, yeah, could the individual go out and buy 5 mutual funds or index funds and be just fine? Yes. But would he end up spending $1 million more in taxes over his lifetime? Probably.
Right.
So it was a great call. It all opened up an opportunity. And that's, if you're out there and you're listening, and I realize not all of you are in this camp, but if you're in that camp and you're like, you know, I'm getting to a point, I'm approaching my 50s now, and I have been saving, and I'm diligent, and I've got these assets, and I just wonder if there's more I can be doing, that's a call. That's a Zoom meeting. And if there is, we'll tell you. Like, in that meeting, we'll say, there's I see. I would never say to this individual, let's do a plan. Let's get Allie, Daniel, Logan involved in a plan if I didn't see opportunity. That
right.
would be pointless.
Because right.
we don't charge for plans. Mm-hmm. We don't charge anything for them. So to spend 40 hours, that'd be dumb. So if there's an opportunity, we'd say it. If not, okay. So I beat that to death. Send us questions. We need those questions. Keep
yep.
them coming. podcast@diymoney.org. And check us out on social. I'm excited about this question.
I am
today.
Too.
This is going to be fun. This is a good one. Thomas, what do you got?
DIY!
DIY Money. This is Thomas from Atlanta. My question is on the recently SEC-approved Bitcoin ETFs. This is brand spanking new to the financial industry. Now, I know you all on the show have talked about a little bit of crypto. Could be a good diversification play. Obviously, not financial advice. I'm curious y'all's thoughts on it, though, because me personally, I already have a cold storage wallet set up, so I don't see a reason to transition to ETFs unless in my retirement accounts, I would want a little bit of exposure and grow tax-free. That'd be a great thing. But for those brand new to crypto investing, I'm curious y'all's thoughts on it, on these being a way to make that happen. There is a small fee, but it's really interesting. So I figured y'all would enjoy talking about it. Love the show. Keep up the bro talk.
Okay. First of all, welcome back, Thomas. Thomas has figured out the system, the DIY money system. I think this might be his,
I mean, he's like upwards of 20 questions. Not actually.
But yeah, listen, it's a no-brainer, right? I mean, now if we start seeing, this is like his seventh question, sixth or seventh. But if we start seeing TikTok videos, you know, how to score $25 a month from Amazon.
Eureka, a great discovery.
You know, then I'm going to question this. But no, keep them coming, Thomas. They're always, I love them. Great questions. I was just in Atlanta. Side story, we were driving back from Florida, and I'm that guy who's like, okay, let's plan something. We took off from Florida Saturday morning and hit Saturday night Atlanta to see a Braves game.
Wow, that's
awesome. And saw the Braves, and when we got into the park, because there was traffic, of course, it's Atlanta, we were top of the second. They were down 6-0. This was the Diamondback games just the other day. Thomas, if you're a fan or anybody out there, so you'll remember this. They were down 6-0, so I bought, of course, $1,000 worth of hot dogs for the family and a couple beers, which was another $1 million, and I was like, this is going to be a terrible game. They came back and won!
Oh, that'd be
fun. It was awesome!
That'd be really cool.
Tomahawk chop, the whole 9 yards. My kids were losing their mind. Oh, it was awesome. So for a couple hours, we were a huge Braves fan.
That's fun.
Huge Braves fan. It was awesome. So shout out to Atlanta. Dante's Down the Hatch, another one of my favorite restaurants in the absolute world. Never heard of that, have you?
Nope.
Hopefully it's still there. I don't know. Maybe it's out of business now. Thomas knows what I'm talking about. What? Thomas. Okay. Here's the deal. First of all, to a degree, Bitcoin ETFs have been around for a while. They have not been spot ETFs, however, but you could have bought and participated in the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust for some time now, GBTC. That's been trading for quite some time, a derivative of Bitcoin, so it did have a little bit of a lag, but nonetheless, you know, it correlated with lag pretty closely. Of course, if you're in the know, you could have also basically bought MicroStrategies or Coinbase, which also correlated exceptionally well with Bitcoin itself. You're right in that I don't personally, I'm going to speak personally, certainly not investment advice. I think there's two reasons to own Bitcoin. The first reason is you want to speculate. What do I mean by that? You just think Bitcoin's going higher, you want to buy it, And sure, maybe an ETF is a good, easy way to own it quickly, speculating on the long-term possible or short-term appreciation of Bitcoin. That's not for me. I don't have a desire for that. That's personally speaking. And candidly, if I was advising someone, they said, what do you think about this? I would say I wouldn't do that personally. Then why do I own a Bitcoin, right? I own one Bitcoin. And I'm happy to own that one Bitcoin now that it hit $72,000. But I'm not going to sell that one Bitcoin. But here's why I own that one Bitcoin. When the light bulb finally went off for me, what the real practical use of Bitcoin could and maybe would be was during the regional banking crisis a couple of years ago, when some people, businesses that were participating with the bank out in California, the name escapes me right now, whatever, the bank that just failed, absolutely failed.
Silicon Valley Bank.
They couldn't get their money. And if you know anything about the banking system, you know that FDIC requires banks to hold 10% in reserve of what they have on deposit overnight. Think back to It's a Wonderful Life when they're placing the whatever it was, $10 or $100 bill or maybe even $1 bill back into the bank. They had to hold on to that one or else they would have gone out of business. So the reserve requirement's 10%. Now the irony is that most banks don't even have that 10%. They actually have to borrow among other banks every single night to meet that reserve requirement. It is, when you learn about this, it's the scariest, most ridiculous thing in the world. But it works. Why does it work? Ignorance. It works based on ignorance because if 300 million Americans, let's say 200 or let's say 150 have bank accounts, 150 million Americans decide one day to show up at all the banks in the world and withdraw their money, newsflash, it ain't there. It's not there. And so there's this possibility, and I'm not a fear monger, and I'm not going to say this is definitely going to happen, but there's this idea that the United States dollar, which has been the world's reserve currency for a very long time, and in my opinion will continue to be, we can talk about that in a whole nother episode, and you can read a plethora of information even on our website about that, but it's not anytime soon that that's just going to disappear. However, what if down the road, because of our debt obligations, because of our challenges in our country, it all of a sudden precipitously begins to lose value, such as we've seen in other countries like Argentina, etc. Okay. Or let's say we have a banking crisis and you can't get your money. So during the regional banking crisis, which was the very first time going back, the last time was Great Financial Crisis, but Bitcoin cryptocurrencies weren't really on the scene then. Maybe they were. It was just Satoshi figuring it out, you know, in his bedroom or whatever he was doing, or if it's even a real person. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I said to myself when this regional bank crisis was going on, oh my goodness, this is why you have Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm sure people have been telling me that for years. Quint, you don't understand, you know, the currency this and the currency that. But you got to understand, for 20 years, I've been in business. When I called half those people in 2000, they told me, why should I invest in the stock market? It's not going to be here anyways. Haven't you seen the national debt? Right? So I've been dealing with this my whole career. But for the first time, I said, I want to own a Bitcoin. It was 17,000 at the time. I want to own a Bitcoin. And I want to learn how to move it onto a cold storage, a ledger stick. I want to become my own bank.
Right.
And in my opinion, that's the real appeal of it, is that you step out of the fiat currency game, the central bank currency game, and you then have the ability to control kind of your own destiny. So I wanted to try it. I wanted to understand the logistics. So I bought a ledger stick, which was like $20. And it's a basically a USB. And oh, by the way, if I throw my USB out the window, I can still buy another ledger stick and I can still get it. And I don't really understand all that. I mean, candidly, whatever. I had a buddy once tell me, he's like, no, Quint, your owning is not a Bitcoin. You're owning the right to part of the blockchain. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. I literally lost me. But I went on Coinbase. I bought a one Bitcoin, $17,000. I then started my Ledger wallet. Like, I opened it, I plugged it into my computer, I set my passcode, I got another 20 other million digits. I mean, it's this ridiculous process. And then I sent my Bitcoin from Coinbase to my Ledger stick. It disappeared on my Coinbase. I could see it on my Ledger stick. I took it out of my Ledger stick, and I hid it somewhere very safe. Very safe. Anyways, no, I put it in a safe, safe, you know, and locked it up. And I haven't touched it since.
Right.
Hopefully it's still there. I have literally not touched it since. Been one of the greatest investments percentage-wise I've had in a very long time. But to me, now I have $70,000 on a Ledger stick. Let's say I woke up one day, the United States currency is absolutely plummeting. I mean, I would hope that I would protect more than $70,000, but I could take that to anywhere in the world. And let's say that all of a sudden Finland and their, or Denmark and their currency, because they have unbelievable fiscal policy there, becomes the world reserve currency. I could take my Ledger stick, I could go to Denmark, and I could change it.
Transfer it into that.
Into that currency. I have totally skipped the concern. Wow.
I'm the king of the world!
I didn't answer his question about ETFs. I didn't mention anything about it. But that's why I own one Bitcoin. That's why I'm not going to speculate in it. I own one. I wish I owned now 10, but I own one.
Yeah, I mean, you just put a lot of maybe finance jargon into that. A couple of different words that I just want to kind of backtrack on. Fiat currency is like United States dollars or yen or euros. That's what fiat currency is. It's a currency that's coming from a central government.
Backed by nothing.
Exactly. So people say that about Bitcoin. Oh, it's backed by nothing. But in actuality, our fiat currency, our United States dollars, are not backed by anything either. They used to be. There used to be a gold standard where they are backed by an amount of gold for dollars that was in the currency system, but that's no longer the case. The only reason that the United States dollar has value is because we give it value, and our government gives it value because you pay taxes in United States dollars, and then those tax dollars go to paying for roads or bridges or schools or whatever it is. So we give the currency value, and just like Bitcoin can appreciate and depreciate in value, so could a United States dollar. So that's kind of what we're talking about, and I think the simplest way to explain a Bitcoin, and this is people that are really, really into Bitcoin and have gone down all the roads are going to just shake their head at me right now. But the simplest way that I understand how to explain it is it's another currency that doesn't have a government tied to it. So there's obviously a blockchain. There's things that track all the transactions, but it is a currency, another form of United States dollars, quote unquote, that is not backed by a government entity that could make changes to it. So our government can affect how the United States dollar does. The Federal Reserve is a big component of that. They take money out of the system and put money back into the system. They make adjustments to interest rates. That can't happen with Bitcoin. But the price of Bitcoin can be affected by what happens to the global environment and what countries are doing around the world. So our country having significant debt on the balance sheet, spending tons and tons of money, the fear of the United States dollars going down is one of the reasons that Bitcoin has done well over recent months. So let's get back to the question. First of all, Quint, you said at the very beginning, now spot ETFs are available. What is a spot ETF mean?
Yeah, it just trades based on the actual price of Bitcoin. It should physically own Bitcoin. It should physically be buying Bitcoin, not a derivative of Bitcoin. So it should actually be buying and selling the underlying asset.
Right. So that's what the spot means. That means that you're actually having a fund that is buying and selling Bitcoin. They have it as part of their portfolio. So you're essentially buying the movement of Bitcoin. You're not necessarily buying a Bitcoin off of the blockchain, but the ETF is doing so. So you're owning a portion of that. I think if you wanted to have Bitcoin as part of your portfolio, you definitely could have a portion of it through an ETF like this. Again, no personal recommendations because it depends on your plan. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to have it as a percentage of your portfolio, but it is just that, a percentage of your portfolio based on your plan, based on what your overall allocation is. If all of your investments are in Bitcoin, wow, you have a super volatile portfolio. And I would ask you, first of all, what are your goals? Like Quint said, are you doing that just for speculation? Do you have a goal for that money? Is that money going to buy a house in the future? Because price swings could really happen on an ETF of Bitcoin or Bitcoin itself. So you have to have a goal for every dollar that you have. I think if you had a small percentage of it, that was a small percentage of your portfolio, maybe you try that. But with every investment that we talk about, make sure you understand what you're buying. Make sure you understand what Bitcoin is, not just my really simple example of what it is, but understand what the blockchain is, understand what a Bitcoin is. I had a couple months ago, my grandfather ask about Bitcoin, and he will never understand what that is. So he probably shouldn't own it. He shouldn't have that as part of his portfolio. So make sure you understand what you're buying. Keep an eye out too, because there's a lot of these different ETFs out there. Keep an eye out what the expenses are. Just like any other mutual fund ETF that you buy, make sure you check that expense ratio and figure out how much they're taking off the top for you having participation in the Bitcoin market. What else, Quint?
Nothing. That's a great, I think we covered a lot of it. I would summarize, you just got to know why you own it.
Yeah.
Daniel would say if he was sitting here, it's the same thing with any asset class, any stock, any investment. You have to have a plan as to why you own it. I'm not saying speculation is terrible. Right. If you want to speculate, speculate, but be honest about it.
Yeah.
Don't just when it starts to go down, all of a sudden it turns into a long-term investment.
Yeah.
That's not good. All right. Great question.
Thank you, Tommy boy.
Thomas, we'll send you a $25 Amazon gift card again. You know the routine. Keep them coming. Maybe not all the time, but keep them coming. We do appreciate it. And remember, friends, the secret to wealth is pretty simple. Live on less than you make. Invest the rest. Do so for a very long time. Make it a great one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the show. If you want your question aired on the show, be sure to send that to us and you'll get a $25 Amazon gift card.
This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only and is not intended as personal financial advice. Before making any financial decision, please do your homework and consult a financial advisor as needed.